In eastern Turkey and northern Syria, the death toll from Monday's earthquakes continues to rise. A few minutes ago, Turkish President Recep Tayyip Erdogan announced a dramatic jump in the number of deaths in his country to 16,170. That takes the overall total on both sides of the border with Syria to more than 19,000. Hope is beginning to fade of finding more survivors under the rubble. But there is some small optimism in Syria's rebel areas in the north. Aid from the United Nations has started moving through the Bab al-Hawa crossing for the first time since the quake struck.
It is the first response after this earthquake. The convoy consists of six trucks loaded with sanitary materials, blankets and other items that will be delivered to one of the organizations that operates in the liberated areas, an organization that is a partner of the UN, in order to be delivered to our people need in those areas.
Well, for more, let's bring in Bernard Smith. He's in Iskenderun in Turkey's Mediterranean coast. Bernard, let's talk about this aid delivery, first of all. One would imagine this is desperately needed by people in Syria, but one wonders if it is going to be nearly enough.
Rob, desperately needed aid, and as they said there, six trucks, it barely scratches the surface of what they need in Syria. In fact, before that aid arrived, the head of the rescue services in that part of Syria said that there's no assistance has come yet and we're waiting to see. They need heavy equipment, the sort of heavy equipment you can see behind me here. That is what they need. They're not getting it. They are digging with shovels and buckets and their bare hands to try and pull people from the rubble now more than 4 days after the earthquake struck. The problem, as it was always the case with Syria, is politics is getting in the way of the rescue effort. The aid is only allowed to cross from Turkey into Syria. There are no other crossings allowed. There's a UN-mandated crossing point. Turkey says if the security situation prevails, is stable, they'll open a couple of other crossing points. But the Assad regime only wants aid crossing front lines. And the reason aid doesn't do that at the moment is because agencies, people are giving aid a concern that the Assad regime will siphon off that aid. That's why before the quake, it was crossing the border from Turkey into Syria. It stopped because of the quake, and it's only just started again, but nothing close to what they so desperately need there, Rob.
Meanwhile, of course, the search and rescue operations are carrying on, not only looking for people still under the rubble, but trying to help survivors as well. We can see some of the operations going on behind you. Talk us through what's happening where you are.
So here in Iskenderun, a city of 250,000 people, we want to show you how where I'm standing looked before to how it looks now. We took this off street view. That shows you the normal life just a few days ago, taken by the Google Street Maps before the earthquake struck, and how it looks now. I'm standing on the remains of those buildings that you see in the picture. They have, earlier on today, managed to pull three people alive out of the building behind me. That is why they are still clinging on to hope here. Every now and then, work stops around me here. A whistle is blown and a call goes out for absolute silence because people think they may have heard somebody deep underground in the buildings. There's a lot of nothing while we've been here, unfortunately, but they are still clinging to that hope. The problem is there have been so much destruction and so much stress on the facilities that the Turkish government can provide that they can't get to every building quickly. And we walk past areas where buildings have just completely pancaked. And if there's any chance of finding people underneath, it's just taking a long time to get to them. And there are places where, and now, again, I think we're actually being asked to be quiet again. So it's a good opportunity just for me to hand back. You'll see all the hands going up for the moment, Rob, I'll keep quiet and I'll hand back to you.
Bernard, thank you very much indeed. That's Bernard Smith reporting to us from Iskenderun on Turkey's Mediterranean coast, where those searches are still continuing. Well, the Turkish president has been visiting affected areas. Recep Tayyip Erdogan's called for unity after being criticised for his government's response to the disaster. Rescues like this one are getting fewer in Turkey. More than 16,000 people have died there. Many remain unaccounted for. Selim Kossiol is joining us now from the headquarters of the Disaster and Emergency Management Authority in Ankara. Selim, President Erdogan had promised housing and shelter and financial support. Of course, the scale of that response has to be enormous to match the scale of the disaster. How is the government dealing with all of this?
Well, Rob, President Erdogan used the word disaster of the century. This is what the seismologists also have been saying, that this earthquake, these two earthquakes that happened in the same day in the same region, hitting 10 cities in eastern Turkey, is called as the disaster of the century. Of course, as you said, the impacts of it is enormous because there have been 13.5 million people living in those areas, in those cities. It means all these people's lives are directly affected. Some of them died, some of them survived, some of them left the cities, some of them have been put to dormitories or hotels designated by the government authorities for them to have temporary accommodation. But of course, there needs to be capital. All these investments that President Erdogan has been mentioning since this morning, like completing the necessary replacement of the housings in those area within 1 year, these are big investments. These require a lot of money, as the government will need to also compensate for this because it's a natural disaster. So Turkey will need more to do this, and this means much more burden on the country's budget, of course, especially thinking that, considering that Turkey has been going through a fragile economic period within the last two and a half years, with a fragile currency depreciating against the U.S. dollar every day. These are going to be very, very difficult tasks for the government to be able to complete. But of course, this is what he pledged, and Turkey was preparing for an election on May 14. This would be a presidential election and a general election that would elect the deputies, the members of the parliament. And President Erdogan still wants this election to be held on the very at the designated time. But everything needs planning, everything needs money, and everything needs investment, about what we're talking about. And the search and rescue operations are the first phase of this post-earthquake process. But following that, there will be a process of normalizing life. These will be also requiring investments. So a long period of work, a difficult task is awaiting for the Turkish government, whether the ruling AK Party stays in power or another party comes to power. But everything will require more money, and this will mean more burden on the government's budget.
That's Selim Kossiol bringing us up to date from Ankara. Well, Ressa Sadr has got more from Kahramanmaraş. It was the epicenter of the disaster.
Nearly 1,000 of buildings have collapsed here, and hundreds of people are dead. Right behind me, you can see that the heavy lifting machines and the vehicles are still digging into the rubbles and trying to reach to the bodies there. So in the last 24 hours, unfortunately, no one has been taken out of the rubbles that you can see alive. But we have seen several dozens of people, dead bodies, were just coming out, and when they were taking out the dead bodies, they were covering them with the blankets and trying to make at least the families comfortable, because that disturbing images were very much upsetting for the families that have been waiting here for almost more than 80 hours by now. So we have seen also several bodies that were taken out from the rubble were burned, because the fire also is still continuing, and the rescue teams haven't been able to manage to distinguish that as well. So you can see that the other buildings that are standing around are heavily damaged, very much cracked. So the rescue teams here need to be extraordinarily meticulously careful there. But still, as I said, they by time, periodically, the work here is stopping, because the rescue team needs to listen to the rubbles, and they are asking everybody to be quiet if there is any voice, any sound that comes from under the rubbles.
Earthquake victims have been using social media to reach out to emergency crews for help. It's hoped that lives could be saved because of messages posted by those stuck in the rubble. Umi Kulsum Sharif reports.
Incredible rescues and desperate searches for loved ones across Turkey and Syria. Earthquake in Turkey and help Syria became trending hashtags on social media, offering the world a window into efforts to find survivors. But images from previous disasters and other countries also filtered onto timelines. That led the Turkish government to impose temporary restrictions on Twitter on Wednesday. Ankara said the platform was being used to spread disinformation, some from fake accounts. But critics say the restrictions hampered efforts to get crucial aid to people. Hours later, after a widespread public outcry, access was restored.
If you want to help personally, go to the sources of Turkish emergency services and see how you can contribute financially.
Twitter has also been important for those coordinating rescue efforts from within the country and outside. And it's been used to offer help and mobilize aid. This video of a young man trapped under debris in the Turkish town of Hatay went viral. His pleas for help finally answered. On the other side of the border in Syria, calls for support have been equally loud on social media platforms. The volunteer organization, the White Helmets, operates without the support of national governments. Its members ask for medical aid through communication apps and social media.
Here in this place in northwest Syria, after 38 hours, the White Helmets are working to rescue the people under the rubble. No help has arrived from outside Syria. The people here are saving their family and their children with themselves.
As well as supporting rescue relief operations, they're vital for those who've survived earthquakes and need food and shelter. And where do they find it? Right here. Facebook, Instagram, TikTok, you name it. Social media is radically changing disaster relief efforts. Umi Kulsum Sharif, Al Jazeera.